kiss your lips a thousand times, and more times than I can count. I have called you mine, you have stood by me in my
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us. Today, we're going to learn about the health benefits of colored greens, how sleep strengthens your memory after learning, nuts of all types increase cognitive scores, especially among older women, the top ways mushrooms help fight cancer, tribulus, it improves libido in women, and much more, all from quality independent science. Then we're going to look at painkiller deaths, top heroin and cocaine combined, from our public health segment from McGill University. Well, if that's true, then why isn't there a national alarm? Why isn't there an outcry? There's nothing. We'll explain why. Also today, we're going to look at commentaries, no guest, from our environmental segment, the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership. What it really is, according to Colin Todhunter from Global Research, is a Thatcherite revolution. Free trade? Forget about it. It's corporate plunder and the war on working people. From John Whitehead from Op-Ed News, questions we should all be asking our government. We will. The U.S. corporate interests are dumping the dollar quietly for the Chinese currency to buy imports. Hillary Clinton's hawkish legacy, we should get this on the record before people forget it, get caught up in the frenzy of voting for Hillary. The mentally ill in the United States are 10 times more likely to end up in prison than in hospitals, being tortured and abused than treated. Fracking boom threatens U.S. water supply. And domestic violence scars our children's DNA. This is from Tulane University. So as you see, we have a lot to share. Let's begin. Always with something that empowers people. And that's what we can do to improve our health. Now, we have paid so much attention to men and their erectile dysfunction. And then we found out that the erectile dysfunction was frequently caused by poor circulation, and also they were low in free testosterone. So instead of stimulating natural testosterone, which you can, and lifestyle changes, we simply gave them drugs. Well, it improved their erectile dysfunction. But then we started to realize, well, could women also be lacking in libido? Yes, for a lot of reasons. So here's the latest to help women improve their libido. It is called Tribulus. Tri, T-R-I, Bu, B-U, Lus, L-U-S. Terra, T-E-R-R-E, Stricit, S-T-R-I-S. Now, here is the latest from Margie King from Green Med Info. We know that low libido is very common in women. I personally believe that it's more often due to people being initially infatuated with each other and all the new and exciting things that they could explore with each other on an intimate level. And then, unless they are creative people, unless they are very fluid and exciting people, that initial rush that creates oxytocin, which is the love hormone, which bonds people, where you want to be with someone, that begins to diminish. So there's a reason why having intimate relations throughout your relationship continues to stimulate the love hormone. And then there comes time when, more often than not, people, because of their busy schedules and their excessive responsibilities, or possibly their stresses, they no longer think that that is as important a priority, because that doesn't pay the bills, that doesn't pay for their kids' college education, That doesn't pay, you know, their mortgage payment. That doesn't get them promoted. So once again, we imbalance ourselves, making other issues more important in our lives. And also, when we stop growing and we stagnate, which many people do in their lives, in their careers, then we become boring. And by extension, things that used to excite us no longer do. We become apathetic. That's one reason, but also hormones play a role. As a woman ages, hormones shift downwards, and that can cause also a loss of libido. So by stimulating both an exciting personal life and also rebalancing, cleansing, and detoxifying, getting your hormone levels back to normal, both of those together will help with libido. And by the way, libido affects a large percentage, millions of American women, but even more in Europe. Now, here's the problem. Most treatments for loss of libido in women, they use antidepressants and hormone therapy, and that's not the right way to approach it. In fact, all over the world, people have been using, going clear back to the five-volume canon of medicine, the herb, simple herb, tribulus. It boosts sex drive in human beings. Now that's since 1000 AD. Researchers designed a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial to assess the safety and efficacy of tribulus in women during their fertile years. The study appeared in the Daryu Journal of Pharmaceutical Sciences. They divided women with low sexual desire into two groups. Every day for 4 weeks, one group received a syrup containing 3.5 milligrams of tribulus extract. The other group received plain syrup. At the beginning of the study and at the end of the treatment, the women completed surveys containing questions and about sexual desire and arousal, lubrication, orgasm, satisfaction, and pain. And this was used from the Female Sexual Function Index, a standard test. At the end of the study, the women who used tribulus experienced significant improvement in all their scores. So it works. By the way, just so you understand, tribulus is a flowering ground cover. It also goes by the name of devil's weed, puncture vine, burrow. It contains active ingredients and which are converted to DHEA in the body. Now, the DHEA, when it's brought back to normal by just taking DHEA, which is about 25 milligrams a day, libido returns also. So that's how it works. Most people don't eat a lot of mushrooms. We should. They're extremely healthy. And there's a nice piece in Natural News about how mushrooms can be used, why we should use them. In fact, mushrooms were so prized that the ancient Egyptians thought that eating them would lead to living a longer life. And of the 100 species of mushrooms that have been studied for their cancer-fighting properties, about 6 of them are standing out as really working. Here's why. And let's start with the simple ones that are easy to get. Oyster mushrooms, shiitake mushrooms, maitake mushrooms, reishi mushrooms, white cap mushrooms. Easy to get. Now, the studies of mushrooms have focused on how they boost the immune system. For example, we have what are called long-chain polysaccharides, especially beta-glucan and alpha-glucan molecules in the mushrooms, and that's where they get their benefit. And one study showed that simply adding 1 to 2 servings of dried shiitake mushrooms to the diet can modulate and benefit your immune system. Now, that means everyone with cancer, autoimmune disease, lupus, AIDS-defining illnesses would benefit tremendously from mushrooms. Now, in particular, if you want the superstar, if you want one to stand out, it would be the maitake, M-A-I, Taki, T-A-K-E. And it has been shown to include a compound that stimulates breast cancer patients' immune systems. Peptides, lectins, fungal proteins, lachesis, these are all in that mushroom. All benefit the immune system. A Japanese animal study involving mice revealed that those suffering from sarcoma showed remarkable results after being given shiitake mushroom extract. In fact, 6 of the 10 mice showed complete regression of their tumors. And while slightly higher concentrations of extract, all 10 mice showed regression of their tumors. Also in Japan, mushrooms are used as an alternative form of medicine for those who are suffering from cancer. One is the extract of the shiitake mushroom, while the other is a mushroom called the Agaricus, R-I-C-U-S, Agaricus. And this mushroom is also known as Agaricus blasea. Now, when the extracts from the shiitake mushroom are combined with vitamin C, the growth of cancer cells in the bladder was reduced by 90%. In some cases, this combination completely killed the cancer cells. Lentinin, lent, L-E-N-T, inin, I-N-A-N, that's a compound found in the shiitake mushrooms, has been shown to increase survival rates in cancer patients. Now, these results are great news for those people who are looking for an easy and tasty way to boost the immune system. Also, we know that nuts increase cognitive scores among elderly women. This is from Case Adams. There's research from Harvard University and Brigham and Women's Hospital that show that if you eat nuts every day, you can increase your cognitive skills, especially if you're an older woman. They followed for 6 years, 16,000 women, and they found a remarkable benefit in cognition. Of course, here's the other side of that, and here's what they say, quote, higher nut intake may be related to better overall cognition at older ages and could be an easily modified public health intervention, end quote. Yes, but anything that improves cognition is also going to improve cardiovascular health and reduce death. For example, another study from Harvard calculated the results of 18 studies that included 83,000 patients with various metabolic syndrome disorders. They found in their pooled analysis that nut, walnut, almond, pistachio, macadamia, Brazil nuts, consumption reduced the risk of ischemic heart disease by 36%, cardiovascular disease by 30%, strokes by 9%, and death from all causes by 15%. Remember, the nuts also contain the omega-3 fatty acids and selenium and vitamin E. Most people, unfortunately, are not getting a good night's sleep. I can't tell you how often in the 47 different clinical studies that I've done with tens of thousands of people from this audience, that the one thing they mention first, within about a month to two of starting the protocols, never medical protocols, always just lifestyle intervention, that they're sleeping through the night. They're not waking up, you know, 4 or 5 times in the night. They wake up refreshed. They have more energy throughout the day. And that's because they're getting a better night's sleep. Well, it's simple. There's no magic to this. I simply am taking the stimulants out. Artificial sweeteners and caffeine. And because a lot of people, late at night, they'll either have a caffeinated tea or they'll have coffee. And that stimulates the adrenal release. And you have end up with catecholamine release, adrenaline release. They'll have sugar. That raises the blood sugar to a point where the body can't sleep. And then you need dark in the room. You need quiet. And you need to stay away from any electromagnetic stimulation, and including cell phones, televisions, digital clocks. This is the latest from New York University Langone Medical Center. Quote, A new study provides important physical evidence to support the idea that sleep helps cement and strengthen new memories. This is published in the peer-reviewed journal Science. The study shows sleep after learning causes very specific structural changes in the brain, namely growth of connections between brain cells that can help them pass information to each other. Quote, here we've shown how sleep helps neurons form very specific connections of dendritic branches that may facilitate long-term memory. We also show how different types of learning form synapses on different branches of the same neurons, suggesting that learning causes very specific structural changes in the brain. That's terrific. So, the takeaway message. Study something, learn a language, learn a musical instrument, learn art, read a challenging book, go to a challenging lecture, watch a challenging documentary, and then when you sleep that night, your brain will give you a good, better night's sleep and start better storing the memories of what you've just learned. And finally, from Health and Nutrition, what are the benefits of collard greens? Well, collard greens are part of the cruciferous vegetable family, which also includes kale and broccoli and Brussels sprouts, cabbage and rutabaga and turnips. Now, these are really important because they help prevent cancer. They help the immune system. This is from MNT Knowledge Center. Quote, they have a group of articles on collard greens. 1 cup of boiled collard greens, I don't recommend boiling them, by the way. You can steam them. Contains only 63 calories, but 5 grams of protein and a good amount of fiber, 8 grams of fiber, that's a lot. And over 250% of your daily needs of vitamin A. Collard greens are an extremely rich source of vitamin K and folate, thiamine, niacin, pantothenic acid, choline, phosphorus, and potassium. And also, they are extremely good in chlorophyll. So, have your collard greens. On our next program, the benefits of cumin seeds, green tea, and what it does for cholesterol. We're also going to take a look at progesterone and why we should be considering progesterone, natural progesterone, and how it can help. And the omega-3 reduces anxiety and inflammation in healthy students and much more. Always with the important material, always qualified. And why do I do this? And I realize I was just given the figures. I'm out on the road filming. We have hundreds of thousands of new listeners. We're approaching 10 million people per week coming to the Progressive Radio Network. We have people listening over the telephone, huge numbers. And just let me give you that number in case you ever turn on this channel and for any reason, a glitch, a cancellation, whatever it may be, I'm not there. You can always call this number and we will always be broadcasting my program at the following phone number. You can just listen. You can put it on speakerphone. By the way, I was in a cab and I was on my way to the airport and I had done a pre-record, meaning I'd recorded it the night before. So there I'm listening to my program. And here's this cab driver driving me to the airport, and he's got the show on, and he's got it on a speaker over his cell phone. And so it sounded like a regular radio. Rather clever, and I'm sure a lot of other people do that, especially with the new technologies. The new technologies, the cell phones have everything, and you can feed them into other gadgets that allow you to hear a perfect amplification. Here are the numbers. 712-432-7231. 712-432-7231. Also, if that line's busy, which sometimes it may be because of so many people trying to get on, 401-347-0456. 401-347-0456. I'll tell you why it's so important to have this. Because, I'll give you an example, WPFW in Washington for 31 years, until just 6 months ago, I was on there. And then they didn't honor the pledges and for 6 months. And so I'm no longer on there. I'm not going to raise money or be a part of a station that does not honor their audience. It's that simple. I understand their plight. I understand their problem. But they have to also understand the audience. You can't promise something to people you can't deliver. In any case, so when I was off the air, people tuned on, couldn't hear it. They had the number. And we had, in the very first day I was off, I think 13,000 people listened from Washington over the phone. Now, a lot of them know they can listen over Progressive Radio Network over the Internet. So there's no way that they can't hear the show. Same way on KPFK. We saw a huge spike when I chose not to be on KPFK anymore. And so keep these numbers. Now, we're going to still have a lot of commentaries today, and I'm setting time aside so that you can call in on our talkback segment and share your points of view. First up, from our environmental segment, and we have two elements on the environment today I'll share with you. The fracking boom threatens U.S. water supplies. This is from Valerie Brown from Climate News Network. Quote, campaigners in the United States warn that fracking for oil or gas, which has transformed the country's energy market, is seriously depleting or contaminating supplies of the most vital asset, water. From Oregon, since the onset of the fracking boom almost a decade ago, every state in the United States has been examining its geological resources in the hope of finding oil or gas it can access through this extraction method. Almost half the states now are producing at least some shale gas, with a few, Texas, Pennsylvania, California, Colorado, North Dakota, sitting on massive deposits. Nearly 500,000 wells in the United States were producing shale gas last year. But while many countries now seek to bolster their economies by following the American lead in exploiting this controversial new source of fossil fuels, campaigners in the United States are warning of serious collateral damage to the environment, the depletion and contamination of vital water supplies. The process of fracking, short for hydraulic fracturing, involves injecting water and sand and chemicals down vertical wells and along horizontal shafts, which can be several miles long, to open up small pores in the rock. This releases the methane for capture. Fracking a well just once uses upwards of 5 million gallons of water, and each well can be fracked 18 times or more. Now, Texas alone used an estimated 25 billion gallons of water for fracking in 2012. That's according to a new report. Where surface water is lacking, as in Texas, underground aquifers are being emptied at record rates. And while fracking water use is still tremendous, it also challenges us because we also need water for agricultural demands and city demands, our own demands. And that's the problem. There is no overarching policy regulating how the industry uses water. In the Energy Policy Act of 2005, a provision known as the Halliburton loophole exempts oil and gas operations from almost all federal air and water regulations, leaving protection of these basic life necessities to the states. Texas does not require operators to report groundwater use, but new regulations in California require operators to state where they will get their water and how they will dispose of their wastewater. Even in the face of a drought emergency, the state's well operators still plan to take most of their water from water sources on the top. Well, what about the people? Well, unfortunately, the people do not have the same right as the person owning the well. And disposing the water when fracking is complete is a challenge. The wastewater is a mixture of injected fresh water, fracking chemicals, and deep formation water, which is usually briny and often mildly radioactive. It can't be recycled for typical water uses, as few public drinking water or sewage treatment plants are equipped to remove fracking contaminants. In fact, some of these contaminants react with chlorine compounds to form the trihalomethanes, which can cause liver and kidney damage. The most reasonable wastewater solution appears to be reusing it in subsequent fracking operations, a practice that is growing in America. Now, there's shady practices. We're seeing the people are dumping this bad water wherever they can. They're being caught. They pay a fine. They're using, for example, one place found they were dumping it down old mine shafts, dumping it on roads where the spigots at the end of the tank just allow it to disperse right out. For example, just last month, a Youngstown company admitted it had dumped thousands of gallons of waste into a snowstorm sewer feeding into a river system. And testing the water showed that it contained really high amounts of benzene, which is a known carcinogen, and toluene, a nervous system toxicant. If concrete well bores or seals at the wellhead are misaligned or corroded, methane and chemicals can migrate into the potable water aquifers, and that way you end up with totally polluted water. So, here's how it works. Let's say that you are in a beautiful, pristine, upstate community, and you have farmland, you're not wealthy, and in comes someone, and they have bought your mineral rights and water rights. And next thing you know, in come operations, they set up, and noise 24/7, trucks 24/7, your animals begin to get sick, you and your family end up sick, your water is contaminated. Too bad. You're really going to have no recourse if you're the average person, because they have unlimited amounts of money to fight you. You've signed a contract, and the federal agencies have protected them, as has some state agencies, especially in Pennsylvania. And I believe that after the next election cycle, New York will allow fracking. Anyone who looks at how the politicians posture to a group to get elected and then completely betray them, it's so common, you'd be naive to assume that that's not going to happen in New York. Now, since the higher elevation aquifers frequently feed into the lower elevation aquifers, all it takes is pollution at one higher elevation to seep into lower elevations. So you could have one well 200 miles north of New York City pollute land much, much closer to the city. But what if you have thousands of wells? Then goodbye, quality of life, upstate New York. And that's going to be happening in a lot more places. So that's why we should say no to hydrofracking everywhere. Separately on our environmental segment, this is from Colin Todd Hunter from Global Research. The article is entitled The Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, A Thatcherite Revolution, Free Trade, No. It is really corporate plunder in the war on working people. Quote, prior to the recent national elections in India, there were calls for a Thatcherite revolution to fast-track the country towards privatization and neoliberalism. Under successor Thatcher-led governments in the 80s, however, inequality skyrocketed in Britain, and economic growth was no better than in the 70s. Traditional manufacturing was decimated, and international finance became the bedrock of the new economy. Jobs disappeared over the horizon to cheap labor economies like China and India. Corporations bought up public utilities to get richer. In fact, virtually all across Britain in towns and cities, and also across its former industrial heartland, these became shadows of what they once were. Low-paid, insecure, non-unionized labor is now the norm, and unemployment and underemployment are rife. Destroying ordinary lives was done in the name of the national interest. Destroying industry was done in the name of efficiency. In 1 year, 28% of the United Kingdom workforce, or some 10 million people, either did not have a job or had stopped looking for one. That's 28%. And that figure was calculated before many public sector jobs were slashed under the lie of austerity. Today, much of the mainstream political and media rhetoric revolves around the need to create jobs facilitate free trade, ensure growth, and make the nation competitive. The endless, tedious mantra says ordinary people have to be flexible and tighten your belts. Expect to do a fair day's work for a fair day's pay, and let the market decide. So they're telling us what? That this creates jobs? This creates growth? Unfortunately, it does neither. What we have seen is austerity. What we have is an ongoing economic crisis, a huge national debt, ruled by bankers and corporate entities and mass surveillance to keep ordinary people in check. So what might the future hold? What do I believe? More of the same. And here we come to the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership. And it's being negotiated between the European Union and the United States, and is intended to be the biggest trade deal in history. The European Union and the U.S. together account for 40% of the global economic output. The European Commission tries to sell the deal to the public by claiming that the agreement will increase gross domestic product by 1% and will entail massive job creation. However, these claims are not supported even by its own studies, which predict growth rates of just zero over the next 10 years, and job loss in several sectors, including agriculture. Corporations are lobbying in the U.S. trade negotiations to use the deal to weaken food safety, weaken labor, weaken health, weaken environmental standards, undermine digital rights. Negotiations are shrouded in secrecy and are being driven by corporate interests only, and the outcome could entail the bypassing of democratic processes in order to push through corporate-friendly policies. And that's why we should all be against it. Let me just give you one example to conclude this commentary. We have corporate plunder in India. There's always been corporate plunder. It's a country of extremes. On the one hand, it's neck and neck with China at about around 1,400,000,000 people. But you have almost 800 billion living in abject poverty. But you also have a large and thriving, highly educated, extremely competent, and sincere, dedicated working class. They want to move upwards in life. But here's the irony of the extremes in India. On the one hand, you have women who come from very wealthy families that have enormous estates. If you were to go into the countryside, sometimes by car, more often not by helicopter if you're wealthy, and you land on your, let's say, your estate, and your estate is teas, you might have thousands upon thousands of acres with very poor Indian women harvesting the tea leaves, for drying and processing. Or you might have cotton plantations. And the people treated on those plantations are treated as if they're serfs. But in your Taj, you have an enormous estate. And there was one time where the wealthiest people, the wealthiest person, the Raj, would have beautiful, magnificent estates. And he collected the taxes. He was the governor, in effect, of that estate. He had to give allegiance to the central power, but he was fairly autonomous, even under British rule. But now those estates are all gone, and they're bought by very wealthy people. And they're magnificent. So if you're in their gardens, they're just breathtaking, because they have, in effect, free, almost free labor. And they rarely, if ever, pay taxes. You'll go into the most polluted cities in the world, and suddenly there's a high-rise building and high-technology buildings and campuses with everything you could imagine. You wouldn't know that you were in some other American city. You could be in Berkeley, for that matter, or Silicon Valley. But it's what happens when you go up in the building and you look out, and suddenly you're surrounded on all sides, but nothing but pure poverty. The smells are overwhelming, because almost 800 million people don't have toilets or running water. So they have to go, so they go outside, wherever they can. It's just accepted way of life. The hygiene is virtually minimal to non-existent. You would never in the United States have anyone go near a river that was as polluted as the Ganges. And yet people bathe there every day, millions, as you see corpses float by and methane bubbles from human excrement, unfiltered. But if you have no other place to go, you go where you can go. If you have to wash your dirty clothes in dirty water, you'll do it. And yet the people who go from the ghetto in dire poverty into these beautiful complexes and go up and do someone's laundry and make their meals and wash their windows and, in effect, tend to every possible need, you look out and they have to come back to that. And so there's this disconnect between the extremes of have and have-nots. It's a corrupt country at every level. Every community, every city, every government agency, it's just massive bureaucracy, bloated, inefficient, because they don't have real populace who understand how to make it better. Could they? Yes. Are they going to? No. And that's only going to cause more people to get wealthy and more people to suffer. In any case, when you had corporate plunder in India, Thatcher, Prime Minister Thatcher, just died this last year, was the handmaiden of the rich. Her role was to destroy subversive or socialist tendencies, and she considered anyone who was a socialist, anyone with humanistic, anyone with really secular behavior as a subversive. And she was a true believer in Keynesian consensus based upon the idea of we do not want a fairness, we do not want a welfare state. And she titled The Balance of Power in Favor of Elite Interest by embarking on a pro-privatization, anti-trade union, and anti-welfare state policy agenda. Now, sections of the public regarded Thatcher as a strong leader who would get things done, where others before her had been too weak and dithered. In India, Modi had been portrayed as a similar person. His newly elected government is expected to move ahead with pro-market reforms that others drag their feet to. To date, India has experienced a brand of neoliberalism light. Yet what we have seen thus far has been state-backed violence, human rights abuses to secure tribal areas for rich foreign and Indian corporations, increasing inequalities, more illicit money than ever pouring into Swiss bank accounts, massive corruption at every inch of India, and cronyism. And with a new administration in place, all we can expect is this is going to accelerate a restructuring of agriculture in favor of GMOs, Western agriculture, with more farmers being forced from their land on behalf of commercial interest. Officialdom wants to depopulate rural areas by shifting over 600 million people to cities. All right. Then bureaucrat technocrat that's never had to live in the real world and that will work on an honest day in your life, how exactly do you think in the age of automation that you're going to then employ 600 million people in a city? You won't. You can't. You're just too damn dumb. So you're going to create 600 million slum dwellers. But you won't care. You don't care now. You've never cared. No one in power seems to care, except for their power in India. Oh, but that's true everywhere, isn't it? So that's my view on that. So everyone in our government who's aware of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, everyone who's aware of the Trans-Atlantic Trade Agreement Investment Partnership knows that this is nothing more than Thatcherite and her policies of free trade, corporate plunder, and working towards those interests coming in the form of this treaty. This treaty should be said no to, and we should not have any of these trade agreements. Because once you have them, you can't change them. And finally, before we take a break, here is the latest on this. McGill University, quote, painkiller deaths top heroin, cocaine combined. More than 16,000 people in the United States and Canada died because of a commonly prescribed painkillers. more than the number of deaths from overdose of heroin and cocaine combined. In a first-of-its-kind review of existing researchers, they, quote, came up with prescription painkiller overdoses have received a lot of attention, but we wanted to find out what solid evidence there was. This is from Professor Nicholas King of the Biomedical Ethics Unit of the Faculty of Medicine at McGill University. And they looked at all the data. We also wanted to find out, quote, why thousands of people in the United States can are dying from prescription painkillers every year and why these rates are climbing steadily over the past two decades. And then they went into it in depth. And there it was. It was published in the peer-reviewed journal, American Journal of Public Health. And it said, quote, it is an epidemic. All right, well, these are all painkillers that people get by prescription. And from oxycodone, long-lasting opiates, and methadone. So that is what's causing it. So why aren't our medical doctors doing something? Why aren't hospitals doing something? Why aren't public health policies doing something? Why don't we have a public health policy discussion on this to show people the high probability of them being injured, becoming dependent, addicted, or dead? Because of the power of the pharmaceutical industry. Behind every major governmental agency are a legion of lobbyists at the federal level, ALEC at the state level, and consultants, think tank operatives at the level of foundations as policy wonks. So the game is against us. So we have to share this information one with another. We need a whole new group of politicians, in my opinion. Unfortunately, the latest public opinion poll came out and showed that politicians' popularity is down to 7%. I think it should be zero. I think every one of these bastards should be thrown out of jail and made to go and work in de-ghettoizing America for the rest of their life. They have betrayed us. They are unworthy to be in office. But then again, I believe that most of the people in office, the bureaucracies, have betrayed us. Bloated, massive, inefficient, corrupt, and dangerous to our well-being. I'm Gary Nall. Those are my thoughts. What are yours? Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Hey, you! Come out here on the floor. Let's rock some more. Come out of here on the floor. Honey, let's rock some more, yeah. But when you get out here, don't you have no fear. Put your hands on your hip and let your backbone slip and work out. Ah, mama, move up.
First step.
Honey, move back.
Second step.
Shuffle to the left.
Third step.
Wobble to the right.
Fourth step.
Now it's plain to see you put a hurting on me, but it's a natural fact. Huh, I like it like that, so work out.
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to be going to another commentary in a moment, and one that's important that I believe that we should be listening to, and that is, this is a short one from John Whitehead, questions we should all be asking our government. In fact, you know what? I'll do it now, and then we'll take your calls. This is in Op-Ed News. Quote, why should anyone trust a government that kills, maims, tortures, lies, spies, cheats, and treats its own citizens like criminals? For that matter, why should anyone trust a government utterly lacking in transparency, whose actions give rise to more troubling questions than satisfactory answers, and whose domestic policies are dictated more by paranoia than need? Unfortunately, We, the people, have become so trusting, so gullible, so easily distracted, so out of touch, so compliant, so indoctrinated on the idea that our government will always do the right thing by us, that we've ignored the warning signs all around us, or at least failed to recognize them as a potential red flag. Now, the consequences of this failure are, on both of our parts, the citizenry and the governments, to do our due diligence in asking the right questions, demanding satisfactory answers, and holding government officials accountable to respecting our rights and abiding by the law, not just two laws, one for them, one for us, but the rule of law, has pushed us to the brink of a nearly intolerable state of affairs. I've said it many times on this program, I will emphasize it again. To me, this is intolerable, at least to those who remember what it was like to live in a place where freedom, due process, and representative government actually meant something. Today, it doesn't. There's certainly no shortage of issues about which we should be asking questions of our government representatives, demanding truthful answers, and subsequently insisting on changes within our government. Is it possible? I do not believe it is humanly possible, because my own look is that reform only allows people who are controlling what is corrupt and maladaptive to begin with to make minor, cosmetic, insignificant changes, but then to patter forth and say, look at what we've done to protect you. You've done nothing to protect us. You've done only what protects your career, Senator, Representative. Keep in mind, however, that the government has mastered the art of evasion. Thus, it is not enough to ask the questions. We need to demand answers, and when those answers aren't forthcoming, either because of a government official's claims to not know, or because it's outside of his or her jurisdiction, or because it's national security, then we should create moratoriums and national strikes against them. For example, here are just a few dozen of the questions that require honest answers by those individuals and agencies that are supposed to be answering to us. To start with, what's the rationale behind turning government agencies into military outposts? There has been a notable buildup in recent years of SWAT teams within non-security-related federal agencies such as the Department of Agriculture, the Railroad Retirement Board, the Tennessee Valley Authority, the Office of Personnel Management, the Consumer Product Safety Commission, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the Education Department. They all have SWAT teams. Why? 73 federal law enforcement agencies employ 120,000 full-time armed on-duty officers with arrest authority. Four-fifths of those officers are under the command of either the Department of Homeland Security or the Department of Justice. Why? What's with all the government agencies stockpiling hollow-point bullets? For example, why does the Department of Agriculture need 40-caliber semi-automatic submachine guns and 320,000 rounds of hollow-point bullets, for that matter? Why does its agents need ballistic vests and body armor? Name me the last time that any U.S. Agriculture agent was threatened or shot or killed. Can you name it? No. Why does the Postal Service need assorted small arms ammunition? Why did the Department of Homeland Security purchase 1.6 billion rounds of hollow point ammunition, along with 7,000 fully automatic 5x45 millimeter NATO personnel defense weapons, plus a huge stash of 30-round high-capacity magazines? That's in addition to the FBI's request for 100 million hollow point rounds. Who are you going to shoot with 100 million rounds of ammunition? The Department of Education, the IRS, the Social Security Administration, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. What, are you looking at a great white orca attacking you? Come on. Do you really think that all Americans are that stupid? Yes, some are. We're the most dumbed-down nation in the world right now per population. We do everything wrong. Everything wrong. We can't do anything right now. On foreign policy, on domestic policy, on Obamacare, on health care, on education, we just screw it up. So now, for those who are looking to do something right, who have historically seen the truth of things and are speaking out, is that your perceived enemy? Because I don't know who your enemy is right now. And why did the Department of Homeland Security acquire more than 2,500 mine-resistant armored protection vehicles to give them to local police departments? Why is the military partnering with local police to conduct training drills around the country? And what exactly are they training for? In Richland, South Carolina, for instance, U.S. Army Special Forces are participating in joint and secretive exercises and training with local deputies. The public has been disallowed from obtaining any information about the purpose of the drills, other than they might be loud and not be alarmed. The Army and Department of Homeland Security also carried out similar drills and maneuvers in Black Hawk helicopters in Texas and in Florida. Why? What are you afraid of? What is this truly about? What is being done to protect the American populace from the threat of military arms and forces, including unarmed drones, being used against them? Policy analysts point to Directive Number 3025-1A, quote, defense support of civil authorities, as justification for government's use of military force to put down civil unrest within the United States. So you mean if you protest against animal rights or civil rights or human rights or vaccine or genetic engineering, does that constitute a terrorist threat to the United States? Evidently, it seems to. When you go to Washington, D.C., do you suddenly lose all capacity for critical and moral thought? Are you just one giant city of cloned morons? I have no respect for you. None. Those are my thoughts. And I wish more people would speak up and speak out in the media against the tyranny, the fascism, the police state that we've become, instead of coddling up to the corporate suck-up Democrat liberals. The real liberals have been kicked out of any discussion, denigrated, as have real conservatives. And why is the Pentagon continuing to purchase mass amounts of ammunition while at the same time preparing to destroy more than $1 billion worth of bullets and missiles? Oh, I saw. You see, it's one department never knows what another one is doing. And moreover, what is really being done to hold the Pentagon accountable for its doctored ledgers, fraud, waste, and mismanagement, which has cost the taxpayers $3 to $6 trillion? According to Reuters, quote, the Pentagon is the only federal agency that has not complied with a law that requires annual audits of all government departments. That means that, quote, $8.4 trillion in taxpayer money doled out by Congress to the Pentagon since 1996. No one knows where it went. Given the similarities between the government's live active shoot drill training exercise carried out at schools and shopping malls and on public transit, which can and do fool law enforcement officials, students, and teachers and bystanders and think it's a real crisis, how much of what is being passed off as real is in fact being staged for the Department of Homeland Security's benefit? Let's say hello to David from New Rochelle. Hi, David, your turn.
Hi there, Gary. Two things. One, in response to what you've just been talking about, it's interesting about the Pentagon, where that airplane hit, just where the auditors were, because Rumsfeld had mentioned several $1 trillion missing, and that's where the plane hit, where those guys were looking for it. The real question is, Guy McPherson, in his 20 years of No More Humans, what is your opinion of that? Thanks very much.
I believe that he is at a prescient moment in our history. I believe that Guy McPherson is one of the true, honest academics who has studied it and chose not to in any way alter the truth. He gave it to us without a painkiller. And it scared everyone, including other academics. But his scholarship is meticulous. He is projecting, and he says within the next 5 years, we will have some cataclysmic episodes within this world that will be a life changer for a lot of people, and it's only going to get worse at every level. I believe that it will get worse for some, but I also believe that it will be better for others. I believe that you'll have green zones where about 1,000 green zones, gated communities, of which there are thousands and tens of millions of people live there, those will be sanctuaries for those people. Major cities, like Manhattan, for example, but not all the boroughs, but sections of the boroughs, will be green zones where you'll have a concentration of resources and quality of life. So those become more expensive, with more people not wanting to be in harm's way or what they consider better quality of life, and they'll be in those places. What it's saying is that whatever you see now as an extreme imbalance, it's going to be manifested many times more. You're going to have the desert and the oasis in the United States. and I believe you'll be seeing it around the world as well. And that's coming soon. I'm looking at the clock, and we're out of time. I'm sorry I don't have time to take more calls. Please remember that every day we're posting articles on a variety of topics dealing with seeking the truth that can empower people, with no political allegiance, no ideology, no religion attached to it. What you believe in is your business. It's not for us to tell you what to believe in. Simply to look at what we believe in, how we're living, and how can we improve the quality of our thinking and lives. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all very much for listening, and you have a nice day. Let's say hello to Utrecht Lead. Hi, Utrecht.
Hello, Gary. How are you doing today?
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay. Well, it's Free Your Mind Friday on Lead Stories, and listeners, as usual, have their say.
Great. Well, we're looking forward to it. And you had a great show yesterday, by the way.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
So let's now listen to Utrecht Lead. And by the way, we've added 4 new programs to the Progressive Radio Network. We are approaching, and I'll announce it soon, 10 million people per week, every 7 days, coming to us. And to put that in perspective, all of Pacific is 5 stations with 860 total broadcasts. They don't have 1% of that. So and unfortunately, I don't believe they're going to turn around and learn any lessons from anyone, because it's just completely dysfunctional at this point. I wished it were not, but that's the way I see it. I'm sorry for those of you who have not received your premiums, and I'm doing all I can to communicate with the management to get you your premiums. The trouble is they don't want to communicate. So I will not be raising any more money for Pacifica until everyone has received their premium. That I can assure you. Have a nice day, everyone.
You put